Welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Heather.
And today we will be discussing and reviewing The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. As usual, let's talk about our fuel for this discussion. What are you drinking, Heather?
Well, I feel like I should be chugging like gallons of wine, but I'm not. I am hydrating with water. Okay. Because it's the evening, and I almost went out and got a Starbucks, I'm not gonna lie to you, but that would be bad news bears because I wouldn't be able to fall asleep later.
Yeah, and you're already gonna be riled up from this episode.
Exactly. So I was like, let me just chill out with some water.
Well, tell me about your delicious coffee that you had this weekend, because I'm still thinking about it.
Oh, yes. We went to a brunch place, and I got a caramel butter pecan latte, right? Is that what it was? With oat milk. And it was bomb. I actually drank the entire thing very quickly.
It was so good. And I was the one who was like, Heather, look at this on the menu. You should get this. And she was like, oh my gosh, I should get this.
It's like, and you know me or something.
But then I ordered something else, which was not as good. And I was like, wow, how could I do this? But also I didn't get oat milk and I should have.
Oat milk just changes iced coffee. I can't have oat milk in hot coffee.
No.
It doesn't taste right, but in an iced coffee, it has to be oat milk. And I love now that Starbucks is no longer charging for different milk.
Yeah, because this place should charge an extra 75 cents.
Everyone else still does. I'm assuming that eventually everyone else will stop because, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had a iced cinnamon caramel. Yes, cinnamon caramel. It was good. It wasn't not good. It just wasn't as good as yours. And I didn't know it had whipped cream on it. No one else's came with whipped cream.
I know. And they asked Christina if she wanted whipped cream on hers, and she said no. So I'm surprised they didn't ask you.
Yeah. And there was just a gallon of whipped cream on there. I was like, wow, okay. It was like falling over the sides. But anyway, it was delicious, and it made up for the bad coffee I had on Saturday. Mm. Also, right now I'm having a Cherry Coke Zero, so I'm still caffeinating. I was going to have some of the leftover Prosecco, but alas, I had no juice.
Good to drink it straight.
I don't like Prosecco straight, unless I'm at like a wedding.
Okay.
Because then it's like festive, you know?
It's bubbly.
Bubbly and fun. We're not having fun.
No.
Okay, well, cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, before we get into it, full disclosure, we are sad and disappointed and scared for the future in light of the election results. I chose this book a few months ago because I thought it would be ironic to cover around the time of the election.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that backfired.
Joke's on you.
Now it's just depressing and scary.
That it is. That it is.
So, whoopsie. But I am still happy I read this. I had never read it before. I think it should be required reading for women, period.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, for everyone, but you know how the men are. All right, so the book format that I read, and I think you have the same one, it has an introduction from the author that was added in 2017. And she does reference the 2016 election. And now for all the people who want to say, well, he was president before and nothing bad happened. I never thought that in my lifetime I would see Roe v. Wade being overturned. I didn't even see it as a possibility. I never thought that would happen. And that's my ignorance. That's my privilege. But it was. And it's so apparent that this term will be so much worse because besides what he himself will do and has promised to do, the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court are all under his thumb and will remain that way even after he is out of office. So we have no idea what will come. And it does not look good for women.
No.
Obviously, there are many other groups that are affected, and we 100% recognize that. But today, in light of our book choice, we'll be focusing on women. And if you think books aren't political, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Honestly. The ignorance of people not thinking that books are political. I'm like, okay. Literally, there's banned books, books getting burned, dystopian books. Like, don't tell me that books are not political.
Like, if you went to see The Hunger Games, surprise, books are political.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read a little quote from the intro that was added. "It can't happen here, could not be depended on. Anything could happen anywhere, given the circumstances." That's a little something to marinate on as we mm-hmm. get into it. All right, so Margaret Atwood is a Canadian writer and literary critic. She was born in 1939.
For real?
Yes. Baffling.
Wow.
And she's still kicking.
I know.
And, like, thriving, killing it. So since 1961, she has published 18 books of poetry, 18 novels, 11 nonfiction books, 9 collections of short fiction, 8 children's books, 2 graphic novels, and a number of small press editions of both poetry and fiction.
Wait, graphic novels?
2 graphic novels.
That one threw me. I wasn't expecting that one.
I gotta look those up.
I know.
She's just
fantastic.
A woman of many talents.
I remember when... I don't know if it's still a thing, but they had that program masterclass and certain celebrities and people would do short videos. You had like buy the program.
Oh, I know yeah. what you're talking about.
So I watched Margaret Atwood's because she did short story masterclass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually surprised that she was born in 1939 because those wasn't that long ago that I watched those videos and she looked great.
I mean, she still looks great. Mm-hmm. Like, current photos, she still looks great.
That's amazing.
I mean, fighting the patriarchy will just...
Right?
Cause you to live forever.
I was just going to say.
So she's also a founder of the Griffin Poetry Prize and the Writers Trust of Canada. Actually, living in Canada will make you live longer, obviously.
Also true.
So this book is hands down her most popular work. It was originally published in 1985. So it's older than both of us. The Handmaid's Tale won a whole bunch of awards in the first few years after it came out. I'm not going to list them all. There's a lot. The sequel, The Testaments, was published in 2019. So 34 years
yeah.
after the first, which is so cool and also mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so recent, 2019.
I know.
So Margaret Atwood defines this book as speculative fiction, not science fiction. And we'll get into why. So here's a little blurb from Wikipedia that I think explains it well, that I could have rewritten in my own words, but why would I do that? This is not a term paper. So Atwood says, "I didn't put in anything that we haven't already done. We're not already doing, we're not seriously trying to do, coupled with trends that are already in progress. So all of those things are real, and therefore the amount of pure invention is close to nil." Shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark Roe v. Wade decision in 2022, undoing a half century of federally protected abortion rights, Atwood wrote in the Atlantic magazine that she did not mean for Gilead, the totalitarian state in The Handmaid's Tale, to become a reality.
Yeah.
So to absolutely no one's surprise, this book has been banned in many states. Here are the reasons. I had to list them all out. Profanity, overly sexual tones, being anti-Christian, featuring LGBTQ plus protagonists, being overall morally corrupt, also due to its themes of devaluation, coercion, enslavement, torture, and outright genocide. This book was the 7th most challenged and banned book in 2019.
Oh my God. Insane. Okay.
So it's obviously been adapted several times over the years, but... the one that we know best is the TV show, obviously, mm-hmm. which is so also another crazy thing that all these people who were like obsessed with the TV show and watching it and stuff don't realize that it's based on this book that is banned in so many schools and in so many libraries and places, but it's okay for it to be on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the TV show is exclusively for Hulu. It started in 2017, and the 6th and final season is set to air next year. It won 8 Primetime Emmy Awards, a Golden Globe, and Elizabeth Moss also received an Emmy and a Golden Globe for her acting in the show. So this is just the magnitude of popularity that this book had and continues to have.
The show itself, though, is so well done, and the acting is phenomenal. Literally, when I was reading the book, because I had watched the show, I could envision everything that was happening because I watched it in real time a couple years ago.
So and it is very close.
It is. And I like, you don't see that often, a show sticking so close to the book. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everything that was in this book was in the show.
Mm-hmm. And also with Hulu, it can be a hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
And this was
one of Hulu's more acclaimed series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely the most awards that any of their shows have gotten. All right, so ready for our description. Now, this is a Storygraph description. I was recently made aware that Goodreads is owned by Amazon and therefore Jeff Bezos. Storygraph is owned by a Black woman. Mm. And we love to see it. So I will be transitioning to Storygraph. But anywho, the descriptions are the same on both. I just thought it was very important, especially for this episode, to say that we need to make subtle changes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So Offred is a handmaid in the Republic of Gilead. She may leave the home of the commander and his wife once a day to walk to food markets, whose signs are now pictures instead of words because women are no longer allowed to read. She must lie on her back once a month and pray that the commander makes her pregnant, because in an age of declining births, Offred and the other handmaids are valued only if their ovaries are viable. Offred can remember the years before, when she lived and made love with her husband Luke, when she played with and protected her daughter, when she had a job, money of her own, and access to knowledge. But all of that is gone now. So, if you didn't know what we were in for, now you do.
Now you know.
So, in the Republic of Gilead, there are the commanders, who are men in positions of power or positions of wealth. And if their wives cannot have children, they're appointed a handmaid. Basically, a woman of reproductive age and relatively good health. Bonus if they already had a child, because it shows that they are capable of it. Then there are Marthas, who take care of the house, they cook, they clean, etc. Due to some combination of events, there is a shortage of children and a threat of not being able to repopulate. This is such a fucked dichotomy, because the women are now the most valuable thing in society, and they're also the most controlled, with the least rights, the least freedoms, the least happiness, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the handmaids go in pairs to the town to buy groceries. They're assigned to another handmaid, but they're not allowed to really talk or communicate. There is a wall in the town where quote-unquote criminals are hanged. Doctors who used to perform abortions when they were legal, gay people, Jews. You can guess. You can guess who's up there. And as Offred moves through her daily routine, every moment her thoughts are flooded with statements that the aunts had taught her. So when she was training to be a handmaid at a type of, it's like a finishing school mixed with a basic training camp.
Literally.
And these aunts carried cattle prods that they used on the women, kept them under very strict watch and rules. And it's this concept, which is unfortunately true, that the best way to control women is through other women.
Yeah.
And these aunts were basically preparing them to behave like handmaids, to be prepared for their new lives as handmaids. And basically, they're making this transition to a new society where they talk about how these handmaids specifically have it the worst because they knew of their past before. Whereas in the future, aka when there's women who have only lived like this and don't have any memories of before, it'll be a lot easier because that will be their normal.
Their way of life. Yeah.
Exactly. So whenever the handmaids are ovulating, basically, they have a ceremony night where they read from the Bible and it's a whole ordeal. And then they take it to the bedroom and, you know, obviously I knew that he would be trying to impregnate the handmaid, but I did not. expect that to happen with the wife in the room holding hands.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
And it's like through a sheet. Like, it's just, no one is fully nude. It's just,
yeah, just
the,
like,
bottom half is
hike the skirt up.
Yeah.
The level of control over these women is so baffling. Like, imagine whoever is starting this ritual and they're explaining it and they're like, okay, you as the wife will be cradling the handmaid in your lap as your husband is thrusting into her.
Mm-hmm. I think it's their fucked up way of the wives being a part of the copulation.
Oh, yeah. And in a way, them approving of it because they're there and nothing sinister can be happening because they're there. The same way that when a baby is born, they sit close to the woman giving birth like it's them giving birth.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
So
and
fucking weird.
They act. I know. They act like they're going into labor.
Yeah. Also, Offred doesn't refer to this sex as rape because she basically says, I chose this. Everything that I'm going through, I chose. Even though her other options are a short life in the colonies, picking up toxic waste, being beaten and killed by her fellow handmaids in a public execution, death. The options aren't really options.
I was going to say, does she really have a choice, though? Because it doesn't seem that way. Mm-hmm. It kind of seems that she was thrusted into this life without any choice.
Mm-hmm. And I completely understand that she needs to tell herself this as a form of self-preservation because she needs to have some type of autonomy and some type of, you know, feeling that she had a say in any of this. Mm-hmm. So the chances are 1 in 4 to birth a healthy baby, which is horrible to comprehend. If the baby has any deformities or is not healthy upon birth, they are called unbabies.
Dark.
So dark. When there is a birth, it's a very big ordeal. The other handmaids get to come watch and the other wives get to come watch and it's this big spectacle. The wife gets what she wants, which is a child, and the handmaid doesn't die. So that's her reward for reproducing. So interspersed in the present timeline, we get a lot of flashbacks to the time before, which is basically like our present day, but it was the 80s in the book. We find out that Offred had a husband, Luke, and a daughter. Things gradually, but still quickly, began to change to this new society. And so there were signs that things were getting bad. Little things like the women were getting fired from their jobs, and then they didn't have access to money, and everything had to go through their husbands. And Offred and Luke, well, whatever her given name was before.
So did you... I liked actually this little thing from Margaret Atwood when she said that she didn't actually have a name for her.
Mm-hmm.
But because June is the only name that she didn't repeat in the book, that's people just... Her readers just chose to call her June.
Assumed. Yeah, and then but, that's what she is in the show.
Yeah, so she didn't actually have... You never knew what her real name was in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe June. And Luke came up with a plan to get fake passports and make it across the border to escape. But they're caught, chased through the woods, and ultimately separated. Offred doesn't even know if Luke and her daughter are still alive, let alone healthy or even okay. And this obviously just adds to her pain and isolation. So in the present, the commander starts inviting Offred to his study. And she's like, okay, what kind of kinky shit is he going to be into? He wants to play Scrabble. And give her passionate kisses.
This was such a weird scenario because, like, I get it. In a sense, he's trying to... Actually, you know what? I don't even know what he's trying to do because he's part of the reason that this is all happening. Like, he's part of the male revolution that took away all these women's rights. And so for him, it's almost, I guess it's almost like, you know, dangling it over her and giving her the option to go back to her past and be able to read and play Scrabble and use lotion.
Like it's just... Well, because at the beginning, you kind of feel sorry for him in a way because it's framed that he doesn't have any connection to his wife. Mm-hmm. They don't have a relationship. He basically just wants a companion and someone to play Scrabble with. But then the longer that Offred is with him and the more he talks and the more he shows his true colors, mm-hmm. you realize that it's not that at all.
No.
It's about control. And like you said, dangling something in front of her. He watches her when she reads. He's just creepy. But Offred decides that she needs to exploit this in some way to get what she needs, because they're both breaking the rules, not just her. And Scrabble, obviously they're breaking so many rules.
Mm-hmm.
Women, especially handmaids, aren't supposed to read or use their little brains. So Scrabble would be exactly the kind of game that is prohibited.
Mm, 100%.
But I love Scrabble, so
me
I was
too.
Into it. So this continues regularly, and they become more and more relaxed with each other. He shares information, basically how they got to this point in society and what the values are of the men in charge and how he agrees with them and he sucks. He also lets her read magazines and, like you said, gives her lotion for her dry skin. Then one night, he sneaks her out and takes her to this club, which is basically a brothel for wealthy and important men, where there are Jezebels. And here is where we find Moira. So Moira was Offred's friend in college. They were super close and they were actually in the handmaid school together.
Mm-hmm.
But Moira tried to escape several times, finally successfully, and she tied up one of the aunts and put on her clothes to escape, which love to see it. But obviously she was caught. And she gives the rundown of what happened to Offred, and she sheds some light on the resistance groups that were trying to hide people and get people out of the country. And in a society where information is extremely important and also mm-hmm. extremely dangerous and hard to come by, Offred is clinging to these words. Because it's a completely different side of the society that she would never get.
Yeah, and I feel like also due to these little excursions with the commander, especially obviously the ones that are at home, I kind of got the vibe through the book that she just, I don't necessarily want to say stop caring, but she kind of accepted her life for what it was and was just rolling with it and didn't have any desire to kind of know what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. It was, she still had that small glimmer of hope because she would still think about her husband and her daughter, but she had kind of accepted that this was her life.
Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, Offred and Off Glen, her shopping partner, have begun to talk. Basically, they were testing the waters with each other until they both knew it was safe. And now they talk as much as they can on their walks and share information. So Offred realizes that there are other people resisting and kind of biding their time if things change. So between Moira and Off Glen, she's starting to see a little, I guess, glimmer of hope, but maybe some inkling that mm-hmm. everything isn't as it seems. The commander's wife, Serena Joy, who is quite a character, really wants a baby because the wives have no other purpose in this society.
Mm-mm.
And so she decides that her husband isn't getting the job done, so Offred should bang Nick, who is the errand boy. This is, of course, prohibited and could end in certain death if anyone finds out, but there is such an imbalance of power and a threat of danger that no matter what, Offred basically has to go with, along with everything that Serena or the commander suggest. They can frame it as a question. They can frame it as a pretending that she has a say or that she could say no, but she can't.
No, her literal right to choose has been ripped away from her in every single aspect of her life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So after they bang the one time, Nick and Offred, Offred decided she wants more. And because she is starting to act a little risky as her relationship with the commander progresses, she just decides to risk it all to be with Nick. She's sharing too much with him. She goes there too often. She isn't careful enough. And she also has feelings of guilt because her husband could still be out there somewhere, mm-hmm. which not like it matters because y'all are not going to end up together. But she's got a lot of time to think.
Yeah.
So, of course, she has a lot of feelings. And as expected, things start to unravel. First, Offred has a new shopping partner. And instead of easing into things the way that Offglen did, she throws it out right away. Big mistake. I was like, no. She also finds out that Offglen was found out and she took her own life before the authorities could take her and interrogate her. So basically saving all of the people
yeah.
that she knew about, that mm-hmm. she was, you know, that were part of the resistance because they would have tortured it out of her.
Yeah.
Then Serena finds evidence of the commander and Offred's secret relationship, and immediately the eyes, which is basically their version of police, arrive to take Offred away. At the last minute, Nick tells her to trust him and go with the men. So we don't know whether they are actually eyes or members of the resistance. And we also don't know if Nick is an eye or a member of the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And Offred's story ends with this mystery. Was she captured or on her way to freedom? And then the story ends with a kind of epilogue where we're in the year 2195. And there's this big conference and they're discussing Offred's story because it was found on cassette tapes.
I didn't have this.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have an epilogue.
Oh. Okay, so the whole thing is that the story was told over a bunch of cassette tapes that were hidden. So they were labeled as like music and there would be like mm-hmm. a couple of songs and then it would turn into this. And so they're speaking at this big conference and basically just going through some of the things that they learned, how they weren't really able to substantiate everything she says or know exactly who she is because there just aren't many records from then because the people in Gilead destroyed all their records and, you know, all of this stuff. You don't fully get a sense of how things are at that time, but they are talking about how mind-blowing all of this is. And at this conference, the speaker explains that the salvagings, where the handmaids would essentially be able to punish a man who was accused of rape by beating him to death publicly and altogether, like an angry mob, he says that was basically a steam valve for the women. They were so closely controlled and allowing them to let out their rage once in a while kept them from revolting. So it's basically the same justification for the purge.
Yeah, more or less.
Like you get it out of your system and then you can deal with the oppression the whole rest of the time. So what do you think ends up happening to Offred? Do you think Nick was trustworthy or do you think he was in it for himself only?
Well, it's hard for me to not be biased because I watched the show before I read the book. Gotcha. So I think that that also kind of skewed my view a little bit on some of the things in the book because I did watch the show when it first came out and I hadn't read the book. But even if I hadn't watched the show, I still think that my theory would be that he was part of the resistance.
Yeah, I think so too. That's what I would hope happened and that's what I would think happened. Just because yeah. based on her trajectory, just can't end with her being caught.
No, you know? And just the way that Nick was, I feel like if Nick was someone that was going to follow all the rules, then he wouldn't be doing what he was doing. He wouldn't mm-hmm. be having this affair with Offred. He wouldn't, you know, be giving her things and everything. I think he would be very by the book.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that he was acting feels resistance.
Yeah. And even if he was doing it to get the information that she was providing, I don't think in this society he would be free from punishment just because he was getting information.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be worth the trade-off.
Yeah, and it never felt malicious in any way whenever he was in the book.
No.
Like, his intent never seemed like there was an underlying secret that he had or mm-hmm. some reason why he was doing this. I think he just wanted the human connection, and he clearly was attracted to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So there's this concept in the book of freedom to versus freedom from. So basically in the before, people had freedom to. Women had freedom to have jobs, have their own money. Now they have freedom from. So freedom from death, certain dangers, health risks. It's the same word in freedom, but it is not the same thing at all.
No.
Their new freedom is freedom under oppression. They don't have freedom to think for themselves, to learn, to...
They don't have freedom at all.
They don't.
And
it's framed to, you know, they're keeping them healthy so that they can reproduce, and they're giving them food and giving, you know, providing for them enough to live, and basically saying you should be grateful that you're not out in the colonies with the other handmaids, that you're not dead, that you're not, you know, like it's just, you should be happy for the scraps we're giving you, basically.
Yeah, which I don't agree with that even being a form of freedom, because it's mm-hmm. actually a form of control, which in return means you don't have freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you had freedom, you would have control over your own thoughts, what you want to eat, what you want to do. That's not the case here at all. And even when she's in the room with the commander, there's very little freedom.
Because it's all on his terms.
Exactly. And if one wrong move or say one wrong thing, and it could all be taken away from her.
Mm-hmm. And you know how men with their fragile egos, she could really set them off.
Mm-hmm.
So
it wouldn't take much.
So I want to talk a little bit about each character and kind of what they represent. So Moira embodies the resistance. She has this typical feminist attitude. She, another symbol of what Offred can't let go of the past, mm-hmm. because not only were they so close and she doesn't know what happened to her, she knows Moira's personality, and she knows that she's not going to fall in line and accept this life that they're being forced into. And I really liked that they brought her back and that Offred was able to see her again, even though it was, you know, jarring for her. And Moira seemed as happy as she could be under the circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked her character because it kind of gave Offred a piece of her past to still connect with, because you can tell throughout the present time chapters that it almost feels like her past is slipping away from her mind, and she's can't decipher what was real and what wasn't, which just goes to show whatever they went through, the women, the brainwashing and the mental abuse that they were under, I wouldn't be able to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Because she can't even recall how old her daughter is, or if she even had a daughter. Like, she's very much, did that happen? Was that mm-hmm. real? Am I living a fever dream? Has this been my life all along? So it's nice that Moira was kind of a pinpoint for her to realize, no, like, this, that was real. Everything was real. And she shows up multiple times throughout this journey of being a handmaid.
Mm-hmm. And even the way that Moira used to tease her mm-hmm. for not being brave. And sometimes she'll feel herself slipping into that mm-hmm. and, you know, recognize like, no, I do have to be brave and I have to stand up for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's Serena Joy, who has such obvious disdain for Offred, partly because it's expected of her. The wives are supposed to detest the handmaids, but also because it's embarrassing and awkward and understandable. I mean, the whole concept of it, and obviously the way that it's structured, is so inherently disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
But given the circumstances, I didn't think that Serena was Offred's biggest problem. Let me put it that way.
No, which is interesting. And that was one of the things that I found that really differed the show from the book, because in the book, she obviously dislikes Offred, dislikes this entire scenario, you know, hates that she has to be there when her husband's fucking her and everything. But you don't get this vile character, but in the show, you do. Serena Joy's character is a hardcore, terrible human being who has multiple times just to have a sliver of redemption and fucks it up every single time. So it was interesting for me to try to picture this Serena that Margaret Atwood is creating in the book compared to the one that I already know from the show. And that was probably the biggest difference for me. And I like both equally, but I like the show one better,
mm-hmm.
just because it feels more like that is how I would have expected someone mm-hmm. to act.
Yeah, I think that probably embodies what it was more often than not
mm-hmm.
in these households.
Yeah.
So then there's the commander, which we talked about a little bit. At first, she kind of likes getting to know him, and she's intrigued by his Scrabble kink. And the more he talks and the more he summons her to his office, the more disgusted she is with him, because everything is a power trip and everything is a show. And he talks about how the reason that women wear different clothes and do their makeup and hair different is because they understand that men want variety and men don't always want the same woman. So they know that. And now they can't blame these men for going to this brothel to see other women.
He's trying to justify affairs.
Oh, yeah. Because that's just how men are.
Yeah.
That's just what men need. So off Glenn. At first, she's kind of an anchor that Offred feels like she has to drag around until she realizes that Off Glenn is actually part of the resistance.
Yeah.
And they start to have a sort of a friendship, or at least a kinship, kind of. But then Offred starts to get annoyed with Off Glenn and doesn't want to gossip with her anymore. She's just checked out.
And that was kind of like what I was saying before, where she kind of got complacent. This was around the time that I felt that way, because you could tell she was kind of pulling back, didn't really want to be involved with the resistance until everything happens with the salvaging and the guy in the square. And then she kind of is kicked back into the reality of like, oh no, this is all fucked up. Mm-hmm. Like, she kind of fell into the trap. She kind of believed in this new system.
100%. And that is exactly the time, because she's getting, you know, more and more daring and risky and all this stuff. And then once Off Glenn is gone, she's like, oh fuck, this is, you know, basically someone she was taking for granted. And it's kind of fucked up, because Offred wanted a friend and then she wasn't happy with what she gets.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in this situation, I would have been so grateful to have Off Glenn.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Seriously. Like, just because she gossips a lot. I love to gossip.
For real.
Bring it on.
I know. I was like, wouldn't you want the tea? I mean, come on. Who doesn't love the tea?
There's so much tea to have.
Mm-hmm.
Another quote from the intro that Margaret Atwood added. Okay. Is The Handmaid's Tale a feminist novel? If you mean an ideological tract in which all women are angels and or so victimized they are incapable of moral choice, no. If you mean a novel in which women are human beings with all the variety of character and behavior that implies, and are also interesting and important, and what happens to them is crucial to the theme, structure, and plot of the book, then yes, in that sense, many books are feminist. So basically, my reason for reading this is that there's this misconception about feminism that it's these super radical women who want to kill off all the men or force them to bow to us and serve us. When in reality, feminism is so much simpler than that at its core. I mean, there's obviously degrees of it and different belief systems within it. But believing that women are human beings who deserve fundamental human rights, their own autonomy, a say in their own health and life decisions, believing all of that is feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And it baffles me that such a large percentage of women recently voted against their own rights. Whether because they think that somehow the government won't do what they say they're going to do, or because the price of gas is more important than women's lives, or because we as women are so conditioned and basically gaslit into believing that women are not powerful, that women are not capable, that we can't be trusted to make our own decisions or have our own best interests at heart.
Listen, these women care more about the eggs in the grocery aisle than the eggs in their body. And that's just all it is.
100%. And pro-life is truly the most infuriating term because it is not about life. If it was about life, there wouldn't be fucking school shootings every other day. If it was about life, we would be giving more assistance to these children after they are born. We would put more money into our foster care systems, into child care systems, into the social work system. We don't care about these embryos when they become children. It is about fucking control. Save all these babies. Okay, what about when they're not babies anymore? Then who the fuck gets to save them?
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting and it's sad. And I mean, if you're still listening to this episode, I can guess that you agree with this at least to some degree. So I'm preaching to the choir. But I'm mad and I rant when I'm mad.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be mad and ranting until the day I can't anymore, which might be sooner than we think.
Well, that's why I said like this election was so much harder for me being a first-time mom. And also being the mom of a girl and just knowing that there's a chance that her rights are going to be ripped away and that that doesn't sit well with me. So it's crazy when other parents are voting against that. You're just voting against your, you know, and people are like, well, it's not going to happen or this and that. And it's like, but no, like it is.
It's like, already fucking happening. I understand happening.
That like Trump can't make it happen the next day, but he's building an army that can make that happen. So it's just, I don't know. It's just blatant ignorance, I think. And for whatever reason, people just want to live in this cookie cutter world where men run everything. They just don't want to see a woman in power.
And they don't want change. And they think just because our society was built on white supremacy that it has to continue that way forever.
Yeah.
And yeah. The fact is, it is already changing. And in red states, women are dying because they mm-hmm. don't have access to healthcare. And not only that, but, you know, people have said to me, oh, it doesn't matter because you're in a blue state. Well, guess what? It might not fucking be blue for very long because mm-hmm. this last election had me sweating a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just so baffling to me because I truly have tried to open my eyes to the other side and to understand what the fuck I'm missing. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is because no one has given me a valid or real reason or any reason that would be more important than human rights. Okay, so as we are ranting, discussing the patriarchy, discussing what our futures could potentially look like. Heather's internet went out. I got kicked out of both my TikTok accounts simultaneously.
We're living in a sim.
They know. And they're trying to take us down. But also, we have decided we would never be able to survive in an underground operation because we are not sneaky enough, number one. Number two, we are not savvy enough and we have generalized anxiety disorders. So anyway, here's a fun one to end on.
Wonderful.
Do you think Margaret Atwood's vision of the future is realistic? Why or why not?
Of course it is. I mean, look at what we're going through now. Unfortunately, history, we can't predict what history is going to look like. And even though our ancestors fought so hard for the rights that we have today, it seems like it's pretty simple to fucking rip them away. And that's devastating and heartbreaking. And the fact that people in our country want to even do that to the other human beings is just disgusting.
Also, we do have, you know, a decent amount of listeners in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear from you guys, either on our social media or, you know, at our email,
mm-hmm.
because I mean, I just feel like we're a fucking laughing stock. So, we are.
Yeah.
If you could let us know how you feel about it, I would be very interested.
And I think that that's like what's so scary about this book is because it can be realistic. You know, like we read like other dystopian books like Hunger Games, Divergent, like that's not going to happen. Like it would have to be like ground zero.
For it's not going to happen during our lifetime, at least.
No, at least not during our lifetime. But the fact that what this book, the premises that it was based on is now so real now, like we're kind of living in the beginnings of what Gilead became, that's terrifying.
Absolutely.
It's just terrifying that men just want to control this country, and now we're going to take away the rights of all these people that earn them and deserve them. You know, and they're against so many different communities, the trans communities, the gay communities, and why can't we all just fucking live? Like, we're on this earth together. Why does it have to be so goddamn difficult?
And, you know, besides the blatant racism, xenophobia, all these horrible, just despicable qualities that these people have, the simple fact of, does gay people getting married fucking affect you? No. You know what? I'm not going to get into it.
No, because I'm
talking about women's rights today.
There's so many posts that I've seen recently that just angered me so much, and I'm just not, I can't.
The point is, we will continue to fight for our rights. We will continue to fight for those who don't have a voice. And for those who it is more dangerous for them to fight for themselves. As for if I think this vision of the future is realistic, sure fucking do. Because we have seen time and time again throughout history how certain groups of people can be targeted and manipulated. We've seen how history can change both quickly by force.
Yeah.
And gradually by charismatic leaders who have the ability to gaslight and lie and force others to do their bidding. If you're not thinking of the Holocaust, you're not fucking thinking at all. We've already seen how more than half of the population of the United States can be so empowered through their ignorance. I mean, the phrase that's sweeping the country, men, young boys saying, your body, my choice.
No.
Because we have, as a nation, shown those disgusting misogynist pigs that they can do whatever they want. No rules, no consequences. And now they are feeling like, I guess empowered is the word. Like they're just feeling like, why can't they voice all of those horrible views? And why can't they be pieces of shit when the president is?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of the whole point. Look at what is going to now lead the country. You know, it's going to shape men to come, and it's just God, women should have the right to abort, because who the fuck wants to bring more men into this country? They're going to be like this.
And, you know, not for nothing, I'm child free by choice, and I have many, many reasons, but one of them is the fear of raising a child in our society, the fear of bringing a child into this world, and just seeing how fucking scary it is. And, you know, my best friend has a daughter. My other best friend is gay. Like, it is just so fucking scary to exist.
It is. And it's very stressful. Very stressful.
Well, I will protect Millie with my life.
I know you
will.
But
anyway.
If there's anyone that would protect Millie with their life, that's not me or Eric, it's you.
Oh yeah. We're going to be marching with our signs. She's going to be on my shoulders. We got this. All right, so let's get to our ratings, because they're going to cut off our internet access pretty soon, and we got to get this shit out. You know what I mean? All right, so our rating scale is pats of butter.
Oh my God, that was so random, but also smart.
So smart.
But also, I'm like, I can't imagine rubbing margarine on my face, because I hate when I touch butter and it's on my hands and I feel like I can't get it off.
And it's so greasy. So
the idea of me wanting to put it on my body gave me the heebie-jeebies, but...
And the fact of just smelling like butter all the time?
I don't know.
It's too much for me.
But I get it. You gotta do what you gotta do in hard times.
Yeah, I don't like to have dry hands, so I get that part.
I know.
All right, so what did you rate The Handmaid's Tale? How many butters?
4.5 pats of butter. This is such a must read for every single woman. I'm going to make Millie read this when she's of age. Like, this has to be, I can see, well, I don't get why. I can, not that I can see why it's banned, because books shouldn't be banned in general. People should have
we could see the why right it scares of speech people.
And the, you know, freedom of speech. You can create art. Books are art. What's the big fucking deal? But I digress. It's just so insane how real this fictional story is turning out in current times. And I just love Margaret Atwood. I've read two of her other books. Her writing style is much different than anything we've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you can't go into it thinking it's going to be like reading a normal fiction novel, because it's not. But it was just so good.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks, but it was so good.
I completely agree. I also gave this 4.5 pats of butter. I love the concept, and I really enjoy these books that are symbolic of society at large or societal issues. I do wish there was more background on the society. Yeah. So a lot of the different members, I didn't fully understand their purpose or why they were in certain positions versus being cast out, like the Marthas and the angels and stuff. But that's just a purely like details to the story. You know what I mean? And I think that this book is going to stay with me for a long, long time. It's an embodiment of my fears as a woman, and yeah, it's a cautionary tale. So it doesn't exactly make me happy to read it, but it's incredible the way that it stood the test of time in a way that she never could have predicted.
No.
And people like to say that we've come so far, but obviously not far enough.
No, we haven't. Like, that's the thing. It's like we have, but then we take many, many steps back. And then we're forced to fight out the issue over and over again, gain traction just to get pushed down again. Like, it's just, it's obviously very, very frustrating. And it has to be so frustrating for the other communities that now their rights are going to be, have the chance of being taken away. It's just sad. It's just so sad. And people just can't recognize that things change, and like, that's okay. And if things aren't gonna look how they looked, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it's just, but it's always been there. It's always been underlying issues. It's, but people just want to turn a blind eye, and they don't want to believe that things can happen, and they can. Like, it's okay. People are allowed to be who they want to be, and there shouldn't be a stigma against that.
And at the end of the day, you know, exactly what she said in the beginning, you can't think, oh, that couldn't happen, because anything can fucking happen. Anything can happen. And horrible, horrible things can happen, but great things can happen too.
I just have to hope that things, even if it's after I'm dead and gone, that this world just finally gets what it deserves and what it should be.
I'm hoping that we're in a simulation and someone's going to pull the plug pretty soon, because this shit ain't funny anymore.
Facts.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, I am glad that we read this.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't chosen lightly, even though, you know, you said that it was, you know, we picked this for a reason because of the times of, because even regardless, even if Trump had lost, there's still the issues of abortion, the rights, Roe v. Wade being overturned. So this book has so much, there's so much symbolism for what we are currently going through now.
Yeah, I completely agree. It never would have been lighthearted. And I actually am relieved that we are talking about it after the election, because I think that we would have looked at it in a much different way prior to. And, you know, we would still kind of be like, imagine if that happened. And now it's like, holy shit, imagine when that happens.
Yeah, I know. I know. Listen, I promise that next month will be much more lighthearted.
Yes. Oh, it will be.
I chose really a holiday romance for the first week and for the first episode of December.
And I chose that to look forward to. Throwback YA horror. So yeah,
it's fine. December, we got this. We'll end on a lighthearted note, because we definitely covered some tough topics this year for sure.
And then next year, back to your regularly scheduled programming. If you're still with us, thank you. You're clearly our people.
You're the OGs. You're a real one.
You're a real one. Side note, when I was, you know, TikTok scrolling during the book talk explosion of
Bookstagram, you know, had it too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Eric's like, oh, don't post that stuff on the book TikTok. And I said, oh, honey, if they're listening to the podcast, they already know.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
They already know where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's all we have for you today. Let's hope we're allowed to speak our minds for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you use. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, or any thoughts specifically on this episode, email us at fullybookedcalfpod@gmail.com. Also be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcalfpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out. And remember,
if you need us, we're fully stressed about the future, but it is what it is. So we're fully booked. Bye.